dealing with her anger, taking her feelings into account. Yes. I don't remember anyone but my family ever being mad at me. I like it. Gently, I touch her face with the tips of my fingers and run them down to her chin. She closes her eyes and angles her cheek to my touch. Leaning down, I run my nose along her naked shoulder, up to her ear, inhaling her sweet scent as desire floods my body. My fingers move to her nape and into her hair. We should talk, she whispers. Later. There's so much I want to say. Me too. I kiss the spot beneath her ear and tug her hair, pulling back her head to expose her throat. My teeth and lips graze her chin and down her neck as my body hums with need. I want you, I whisper, as I kiss the spot where her pulse beats beneath her skin. She moans and holds my arms. I tense for a moment, but the darkness stays dormant. Are you bleeding? I ask between kisses. She stills. Yes, she says. Do you have cramps? No. Her voice is quiet yet vehement with embarrassment. I stop kissing her and look down into her eyes. Why is she embarrassed? It's her body. Did you take your pill? Yes, she answers. Good. Let's go have a bath. In the over-the-top bathroom, I release Anna's hand. The atmosphere is hot and humid, steam gently rising above the foam. In this heat, I'm overdressed, my linen shirt and jeans sticking to my skin. Anna watches me, her skin dewy from the humidity. Do you have a hair tie? I ask. Her hair will start clinging to her face. She pulls out a hair elastic from her jeans pocket. Put your hair up, I tell her, and watch as she follows my command with quick, efficient grace. Good girl, no more arguing. A few strands escape from her ponytail, but she looks lovely. I turn off the faucet and, taking her hand, guide her into the other part of the bathroom, where a large gilded mirror hangs over two sinks set in marble. My eyes on hers in the mirror, I stand behind her and ask her to take off her sandals. Hastily, she removes them and lets them drop to the floor. Lift up your arms, I whisper. Grasping the hem of her pretty top, I peel it off and over her head, freeing her breasts. Reaching around, I undo the top button in the zipper of her jeans. I'm going to have you in the bathroom, Anastasia. Her eyes stray to my mouth, and she licks her lips. Under the soft light, her pupils gleam with excitement. Bending down, I drop tender kisses on her neck, hook my thumbs into the waistband of her jeans, and slowly peel them down over her fine ass, catching her panties in my hands on the way down. Kneeling behind her, I ease them down her legs to her feet. Step out of your jeans, I order. Grabbing the edge of the sink, she obliges. Now she's naked, and I'm face to face with her ass. I pop her jeans, panties, and top onto a white stool beneath the sink and contemplate all the things I could do to that ass. I notice a blue string between her legs. Her tampon is still in place, so I settle for kissing and nipping her behind gently before standing up. Our eyes connect in the mirror once more, and I splay my hand out over her smooth, flat belly. Look at you. You are so beautiful. See how you feel. Her breathing quickens as I take both her hands in mine and spread her fingers on her belly beneath my outstretched hands. Feel how soft your skin is, I whisper. Gently, I guide her hands across her torso in a wide sweeping circle, then travel them up to her breasts. Feel how full your breasts are. I hold her hands beneath her breasts so she's cupping them. Gently, I tease her nipples with my thumbs. She moans and bows her back, pressing her breasts into our conjoined hands. Trapping her nipples between her thumbs and mine, I tug gently again and again, and take pleasure watching them harden and lengthen in response, like a certain part of my anatomy. She closes her eyes and wriggles against me, brushing her behind over my erection. She moans, her head against my shoulder. "That's right, baby," I murmur against her neck, enjoying her body coming alive beneath her touch. I guide her hands down her front to her hips, then in toward her pubic hair. I push my leg between hers and with my foot widen her stance as I guide her hands over her vulva, one hand at a time, over and over, pressing her fingers over her clitoris again and again. She groans, and I watch her writhe against me in the mirror. Lord, she's a goddess. "Look at you glow, Anastasia." I kiss and nip her neck and her shoulder, then I let go, leaving her hanging, and she opens her eyes as I step back. "Carry on," I tell her, wondering what she'll do. She falters for a moment, then rubs herself with one hand, but not nearly as enthusiastically. Oh, this will never do. Quickly, I strip off my sticky shirt, jeans, and underwear, freeing my erection. "You'd rather I do this?" I ask, her eyes blazing at mine in the mirror. "Oh, yes, please," she says, a desperate, needy edge to her voice. I wrap my arms around her, my front against her back, my cock resting in the cleft of her fine, fine ass. I take her hands in mine once more, guiding them over her clitoris, one at a time, again and again, pressing, stroking, and arousing her. She whimpers as I suck and nip at her nape. Her legs begin to tremble. Abruptly, I spin her around so she's facing me. I grasp her wrists in one of my hands, holding them behind her back, while I tug on her ponytail with the other, bringing her lips up to mine. I kiss her, consuming her mouth, reveling in the taste of her. Orange juice and sweet, sweet Anna. Her breathing is harsh like mine. "When did you start your period, Anastasia?" "I want to fuck you without a condom." "Yesterday," she breathes. "Good." I step back and spin her around. "Hold on to this sink," I command. Grasping her hips, I lift her and pull her backwards so she's bent over. My hand glides down her ass to the blue string, and I tug out the tampon, which I toss in the toilet. She gasps, shocked, I think, but I grab my cock and slide into her quickly. My breath whistles between my teeth. "Fuck. She feels good. So good. Skin against skin." I edge back, then sink into her once more, slowly, feeling every precious, slick inch of her. She groans and pushes against me. "Oh, yes, Anna." She tightens her grip on the marble as I pick up speed, and I grasp her hips, building, building, then hammering into her, claiming her, possessing her. "Don't be jealous, Anna. I want only you. You. You." My fingers find her clitoris, and I tease her, caress her, and stimulate her so that her legs begin to tremble once more. "That's right, baby," I murmur, my voice hoarse as I pound into her with a punishing "I own you" rhythm. "Don't argue with me. Don't fight with me." Her legs stiffen as I grind into her, and her body starts to quiver. Suddenly she cries out as her orgasm seizes her, taking me with her. "Oh, Anna." I breathe as I let go, the world blurring, and I come inside her. "Fuck. Oh, baby, will I ever get enough of you?" I whisper as I sink onto her. Slowly I descend to the floor, bringing her with me and wrapping my arms around her. She sits, her head against my shoulder, still panting. Sweet Lord, was it ever like this? I kiss her hair, and she calms, her eyes closed, her breathing slowly returning to normal as I hold her. We're both sweaty and hot in a humid bathroom, but I don't want to be anywhere else. She shifts. "I'm bleeding," she says. "Doesn't bother me." I don't want to let her go.
I noticed.
Her tone is dry. Does it bother you? It shouldn't. It's natural. I've known only one woman who was squeamish about period sex, but I wouldn't take any of that crap from her.
No, not at all.
Anna peers up at me with clear blue eyes. Good. Let's have a bath. I free her, and her brows knit for a moment while she stares at my chest. Her rosy face loses some of its color, and clouded eyes meet mine.
What is it?
I ask, alarmed by her expression.
Your scars. They're not from chickenpox.
No, they're not. My tone is arctic. I do not want to talk about this. Standing, I hold my hand out to her and pull her to her feet. Her eyes are wide with horror. It'll be pity next. Don't look at me like that, I warn and release her hand. I don't want your fucking pity, Anna. Don't go there. She studies her hand, suitably chastened, I hope.
Did she do that?
Her voice is almost inaudible. I scowl at her, saying nothing, as I try to contain my sudden rage. My silence compels her to look at me.
She? I snarl. Mrs. Robinson?
Anna pales at my tone. She's not an animal, Anastasia. Of course she didn't. I don't understand why you feel you have to demonize her. She bows her head to avoid eye contact, walks briskly past me, and steps into the bath, sinking into the foam so I can no longer see her body. Looking up at me, her face contrite and open, she says,
I just wonder what you would be like if you hadn't met her, if she hadn't introduced you to your, lifestyle.
Damn it. We're back to Elena. I stalk toward the tub, slip into the water, and sit on the underwater shelf out of her reach. She watches me, waiting for an answer. The silence between us swells until all I can hear is the blood pumping through my ears.
Fuck.
She doesn't take her eyes off mine.
Stand down, Anna.
Nope, it's not going to happen. I shake my head. Impossible woman. I would probably have gone the way of my birth mother, had it not been for Mrs. Robinson. She tucks a damp tendril behind her ear, staying quiet.
What can I say about Elena?
I think about our relationship.
Elena and me.
Those heady years. The secrecy. The furtive couplings. The pain. The pleasure. The release. The order and calm she brought to my world. She loved me in a way I found acceptable, I muse, almost to myself.
Acceptable?
Anna says in disbelief. Yes. Anna's expression is expectant. She wants more.
Shit.
She distracted me from the destructive path I found myself following. My voice is low. It's very hard to grow up in a perfect family when you're not perfect. She inhales sharply.
Hell. I hate talking about this. Does she still love you?
No. I don't think so. Not like that. I keep telling you it was a long time ago. It's in the past. I couldn't change it even if I wanted to, which I don't. She saved me from myself. I've never discussed this with anyone. Except Dr. Flynn, of course. And the only reason I'm talking about this now to you is because I want you to trust me.
I do trust you, she says. But I do want to know you better. And whenever I try to talk to you, you distract me. There's so much I want to know.
Oh, for pity's sake, Anastasia. What do you want to know? What do I have to do? She stares at her hands under the surface of the water.
I'm just trying to understand. You're such an enigma, unlike anyone I've met before. I'm glad you're telling me what I want to know.
Abruptly filled with resolve, she moves through the water to sit beside me, leaning against me so my skin sticks to hers.
Please don't be angry with me, she says.
I'm not angry with you, Anastasia. I'm just not used to this kind of talking, this probing. I only have this with Dr. Flynn and with... Damn.
With her? Mrs. Robinson? You talk to her, she says, her voice breathy and quiet.
Yes, I do.
What about?
I turn to face her so suddenly that water sloshes out of the bath and onto the floor. Persistent, aren't you? Life, the universe, business. Anastasia, Mrs. R and I go way back. We can discuss anything.
Me?
She asks. Yes.
Why do you talk about me?
She asks, and now she sounds sullen.
I've never met anyone like you, Anastasia. What does that mean? Anyone who didn't just automatically sign your paperwork? No questions asked?
I shake my head. No. I need advice.
And you take advice from Mrs. Peto?
She snaps. Anastasia, enough! I almost shout. Or I'll put you across my knee. I have no sexual or romantic interest in her whatsoever. She's a dear, valued friend and a business partner. That's all. We have a past, a shared history, which was monumentally beneficial for me, though it fucked up her marriage. But that side of our relationship is over. She squares her shoulders.
And your parents never found out?
No, I growl. I've told you this. She regards me warily, and I think she knows she's pushed me to my limit.
Are you done?
I ask.
For now.
Thank God for that. She wasn't lying when she told me there was much she wanted to say. But we're not talking about what I want to talk about. I need to know where I stand, if our arrangement has a chance. Seize the day, Gray. Right, my turn. You haven't responded to my email. She tucks her hair behind her ear, then shakes her head.
I was going to respond, but now you're here.
You'd rather I wasn't? I hold my breath.
No, I'm pleased, she says.
Good, I'm pleased I'm here too, in spite of your interrogation. So, while it's acceptable to grill me, you think you can claim some kind of diplomatic immunity just because I've flown all this way to see you? I'm not buying it, Miss Steele. I want to know how you feel. Her brows knit together.
I told you. I am pleased you're here. Thank you for coming all this way.
She sounds sincere.
It's my pleasure.
I lean down and kiss her, and she opens like a flower, offering and wanting more. I pull back. No, I think I want some answers first before we do any more. She sighs, her wary look returning.
What do you want to know?
Well, how you feel about our would-be arrangement, for starters. She makes a moo with her mouth, as if her response will be unpalatable. Oh, dear.
I don't think I can do it for an extended period of time. A whole weekend being someone I'm not.
She looks down, away from me. That's not a no. What's more, I think she's right. Grasping her chin, I tilt her head up so I can see her eyes.
No, I don't think you could either. Are you laughing at me?
Yes, but in a good way. I kiss her again. You're not a great submissive. Her mouth drops open. Is she feigning offense? And then she laughs, a sweet, infectious laugh, and I know she's not offended.
Maybe I don't have a good teacher.
Good point, well made, Miss Steele. I laugh, too. Maybe. Perhaps I should be stricter with you. I search her face. Was it that bad when I spanked you the first time?
No, not really, she says,
her cheeks flushing a little. "It's more the idea of it?" I ask, pressing her further.
"I suppose, feeling pleasure when one isn't supposed to."
I remember feeling the same. Takes a while to get your head around it. We are finally having the discussion. "You can always use the safe word, Anastasia. Don't forget that. And as long as you follow the rules, which fulfill a deep need in me for control and to keep you safe, then perhaps we can find a way forward."
"Why do you need to control me?"
"Because it satisfies a need in me that wasn't met in my formative years."
"So it's a form of therapy?"
"I have not thought of it like that, but yes, I suppose it is." She nods.
"But here's the thing. One moment you say, don't defy me. The next you say you like to be challenged. That's a very fine line to tread successfully."
"I can see that. But you seem to be doing fine so far."
"But at what personal cost? I'm tied up in knots here."
"I like you tied up in knots."
"That's not what I meant."
She dashes her hand through the water, soaking me.
"Did you just splash me?"
"Yes," she says. "Oh, Miss Steele." I wrap my arm around her waist and tug her onto my lap, slopping water onto the floor once again. "I think we've done enough talking for now." I hold her head between my hands and kiss her, my tongue teasing her lips apart, then delving into her mouth, dominating her. She runs her fingers through my hair, returning my kiss, twisting her tongue around mine. Angling her head with one hand, I shift her with the other so she's astride me. I pull back to take a breath. Her eyes are dark and carnal, her lust plain to see. I pull her wrists behind her back and grasp them in one hand. "I'm going to have you now," I declare, and I lift her so that my erection is poised beneath her. "Ready?"
"Yes,"
she breathes, and slowly I lower her onto me, watching her expression as I fill her. She moans and closes her eyes, thrusting her breasts forward into my face. "Oh, sweet Jesus." I flex my hips, lifting her, burying myself even deeper inside her, and lean forward so our foreheads are touching. She feels so good.
"Please let my hands go,"
she whispers. I open my eyes and see her mouth open as she drags air into her lungs. "Don't touch me," I plead, and release her hands and grasp her hips. She grabs the edge of the bath and slowly starts to take me, up and down, oh so slowly. She opens her eyes to find mine on her face, watching her, riding me. Leaning down, she kisses me, her tongue invading my mouth. I close my eyes, reveling in the sensation. "Oh yes, Anna." Her fingers are in my hair, tugging and pulling as she kisses me, her wet tongue entwining with mine as she moves. I hold her hips and start lifting her higher and faster, vaguely aware that water is cascading out of the bath. But I don't care. I want her, like this. This beautiful woman who moans into my mouth. Up, down, up, down, over and over. Giving herself to me, taking me.
Ah!
The pleasure catches in her throat. "That's right, baby," I whisper, as she quickens around me, then cries out as she explodes into her orgasm. I wrap my arms around her, embracing her, holding her tightly as I lose myself and come inside her. "Anna, baby," I cry, and I know I never want to let her go. She kisses my ear.
"That was..."
she breathes. "Yeah." Holding her arms, I urge her back so I can study her. She looks sleepy and sated, and I imagine I must look the same. "Thank you," I whisper. She looks confused. "For not touching me," I clarify. Her face softens and she raises her hand. I tense.
but she shakes her head and traces my lips with her finger. You said it's a hard limit. I understand. And she leans forward and kisses me. The unfamiliar feeling surfaces, swelling in my chest, unnamed and dangerous. Let's get you to bed, unless you have to go home. I'm alarmed at where my emotions are going.
No, I don't have to go.
Good. Stay. I stand her up and climb out of the bath to fetch us both towels and dismiss my unsettling feelings. I wrap her in a towel, drape one around my waist, and drop another on the floor in a vain attempt to clean up the water sloshed on the floor. Anna wanders over to the sinks as I drain the bath. Well, that was an interesting evening. And she was right. It was good to talk, though I'm not sure we've resolved anything. She's brushing her teeth with my toothbrush when I walk through the bathroom to the bedroom. It makes me smile. I pick up my phone and see that the missed call was from Taylor. I text him. Everything okay? I'll be leaving to go gliding at 6 a.m. He responds immediately. That's why I was calling. Weather looks good. I'll see you there. Good night, sir. I'm taking Miss Steele soaring. My delight bubbles up into a broad grin that widens when she comes out of the bathroom wrapped in the towel. I need my purse, she says, looking a little shy. I think you left it in the living room. She scampers off to fetch it, and I brush my teeth, knowing that the toothbrush has just been in her mouth. In the bedroom, I discard the towel, pull back the sheets, and lie down, waiting for Anna. She's disappeared into the bathroom again and closed the door. Moments later, she returns. She drops her towel and lies down beside me, naked except for a shy smile. We lie in bed facing each other, hugging our pillows. Do you want to sleep? I ask. I know we have to get up early, and it's nearly 11.
No, I'm not tired, she says, her eyes shining.
What do you want to do?
More sex. Talk.
More talking, oh Lord. I smile, resigned.
About what? Stuff.
What stuff?
You.
What about me?
What's your favorite film?
I like her quick-fire questions. Today, it's The Piano. She beams back at me.
Of course, silly me. Such a sad, exciting score, which no doubt you can play. So many accomplishments, Mr. Gray.
And the greatest one is you, Miss Steele. Her grin broadens.
So I am number 17.
17?
Number of women you've, had sex with.
Oh, shit. Not exactly. Her smile vanishes.
You said 15.
I was referring to the number of women in my playroom. I thought that's what you meant. You didn't ask me how many women I'd had sex with.
Oh.
Her eyes widen.
Vanilla?
She asks. No, you are my one vanilla conquest. And for some strange reason, I feel insanely pleased with myself. I can't give you a number. I didn't put notches in the bedpost or anything.
What are we talking, tens, hundreds, thousands?
Tens! We're in the tens, for pity's sake! I feign outrage.
All submissives?
Yes.
Stop grinning at me,
she says haughtily, trying and failing to stifle hers. I can't. You're funny. And I feel a little lightheaded as we beam at each other.
Funny peculiar or funny haha?
A bit of both, I think.
That's damned cheeky coming from you, she says.
I kiss her nose to prepare her. This will shock you, Anastasia. Ready? Her eyes are wide and eager, full of delight. Tell her. All submissives in training, when I was training. There are places in and around Seattle that one can go and practice. Learn to do what I do.
Oh,
she exclaims.
Yep, I've paid for sex, Anastasia.
That's nothing to be proud of, she scolds me. And you're right, I am deeply shocked. And cross that I can't shock you.
You wore my underwear.
Did that shock you?
Yes. You didn't wear your panties to meet my parents. Her delight is restored.
Did that shock you?
Yes.
It seems I can only shock you in the underwear department.
You told me you were a virgin. That's the biggest shock I've ever had.
Yes, your face was a picture, a Kodak moment.
She giggles, and her face lights up. You let me work you over with a riding crop. I'm grinning like the fucking Cheshire Cat. When have I ever stretched out naked beside a woman and just talked?
Did that shock you?
Yep.
Well, I may let you do it again.
Oh, I do hope so, Miss Steele. This weekend?
Okay,
she says. Okay?
Yes, I'll go to the Red Room of Pain again.
You say my name.
That shocks you?
The fact that I like it shocks me.
Christian,
she whispers, and the sound of my name from her lips spreads warmth through my body. Anna, I want to do something tomorrow.
What?
A surprise for you. She yawns. Enough, she's tired. Am I boring you, Miss Steele?
Never,
she confesses. I lean across and give her a quick kiss. Sleep, I order, and switch off the bedside light. And a few moments later, I hear her even breathing. She's fast asleep. I pull a sheet over her, roll onto my back, and stare up at the whirring ceiling fan. Well, talking isn't so bad. Today worked out after all.
Thank you, Elena.
And with a sated smile, I close my eyes. Thursday, June 2nd, 2011.
No, don't leave me.
The whispered words penetrate my slumber, and I stir and wake. What was that? I look around the room. Where the hell am I? Oh yes, Savannah.
No, please, don't leave me.
What? It's Anna.
I'm not going anywhere,
I mutter, bemused. Turning, I prop myself up on my elbow. She's huddled beside me, and she looks like she's asleep.
I won't leave you,
she mumbles. My scalp prickles. I'm very glad to hear that. She sighs.
Anna?
I whisper. But she doesn't react. Her eyes are closed. She's fast asleep. She must be dreaming. What is she dreaming about?
Christian,
she says. Yes? I respond automatically. But she says nothing. She's definitely asleep, but I've never heard her talk in her sleep before. I watch her, fascinated. Her face is illuminated by ambient light from the living area. Her brow crinkles for a moment, as if an unpleasant thought is plaguing her. Then it's smooth once more. With her lips parted as she breathes, her face soft in sleep, she's beautiful. And she doesn't want me to go. And she won't leave me. The candor of her subconscious admission sweeps through me like a summer breeze, leaving warmth and hope in its wake. She's not going to leave me. Well, you have your answer, Gray. I smile down at her. She seems to have settled and stopped talking. I check the time on the radio alarm. 4:57. It's time to get up anyway, and I'm elated. I'm going soaring with Anna. I love soaring. I place a quick kiss on her temple, rise, and head into the main room of the suite, where I order breakfast and check the local weather report. Another hot day with high humidity, no rain. I shower quickly, dry myself, then gather Anna's clothes from the bathroom and lay them out on a chair near the bed. As I pick up her panties, I remember how my devious plan to confiscate her underwear backfired. Oh, Miss Steele. And after our first night together. Oh, by the way, I'm wearing your underwear. And she yanks the waistband up so I can see the words Polo and Ralph peeking over her jeans. I shake my head, and from the armoire, I take a pair of my boxer briefs and deposit them on the chair. I like it when she wears my clothes. She mumbles again, and I think she said cage, but I'm not sure. What the hell is that about? She doesn't stir, but remains blissfully asleep while I dress. As I pull on my t-shirt, there's a knock on the door. Breakfast has arrived. Pastries, a coffee for me, and Twining's English breakfast tea for Anna. Fortunately, the hotel stocks her favorite blend. It's time to wake Miss Steele.
Strawberry, she mutters as I sit down beside her on the bed. What's with the fruit?
Anastasia, I summon her gently.
I want more.
I know you do, and so do I. Come on, baby. I continue to coax her awake. She gripes.
No, I want to touch you.
Shit. Wake up. I lean down and gently tug her earlobe with my teeth.
No.
She screws her eyes tight. Wake up, baby.
Oh, no.
She protests. Time to get up, baby. I'm going to switch on the side light. I reach across and switch it on, bathing her in a pool of dim light. She squints.
No.
She whines. Her reluctance to wake is amusing and different. In my previous relationships, a sleepy submissive could expect to be disciplined. I nuzzle her ear and whisper, I want to chase the dawn with you. I kiss her cheek, kiss each eyelid in turn, kiss the tip of her nose, and kiss her lips. Her eyes flicker open. Good morning, beautiful. And they close again. She grumbles, and I grin down at her. You are not a morning person. She opens one unfocused eye, studying me.
I thought you wanted sex, she says, her relief obvious.
I suppress my laugh. Anastasia, I always want sex with you. It's heartwarming to know that you feel the same.
Of course I do, just not when it's so late.
She hugs her pillow. It's not late, it's early. Come on, up you go. We're going out. I'll take a rain check on the sex.
I was having such a nice dream, she sighs, peering up at me.
Dream about what?
You.
Her face warms. What was I doing this time?
Trying to feed me strawberries, she says with a small voice.
That accounts for her babbling. Dr. Flynn could have a field day with that. Up, get dressed. Don't bother to shower, we can do that later. She protests, but sits up, ignoring the sheet that slips down to her waist and exposes her body. My cock stirs. With her hair mussed, cascading over her shoulders and curling around her naked breasts, she looks gorgeous. Ignoring my arousal, I stand up to give her some room.
What time is it?
She asks, her voice sleepy. 5:30 in the morning.
Feels like 3 a.m.
We don't have much time. I let you sleep as long as possible. Come. I want to drag her out of bed and dress her myself. I can't wait to get her airborne.
Can't I have a shower?
If you have a shower, I'll want one with you, and you and I know what will happen then. The day will just go. Come. She gives me a patient look.
What are we doing?
It's a surprise. I told you. She shakes her head and beams, very much amused.
Okay.
She climbs out of bed, oblivious to her nudity, and notices her clothes on the chair. I'm delighted that she's not her usual shy self. Maybe it's because she's sleepy. She slides on my underwear and gives me a broad smile. I'll give you some room now that you're up. Leaving her to dress, I wander back into the main room, sit down at the small dining table, and help myself to some coffee. She joins me a few minutes later.
Eat, I order, motioning for her to take a seat. She stares at me, transfixed, her eyes glazed. Anastasia, I say, interrupting her daydream. Her eyelashes flutter as she comes back from wherever she's been.
I'll have some tea. Can I take a croissant for later?
She asks, hopefully. She's not going to eat. Don't rain on my parade, Anastasia.
I'll eat later when my stomach's woken up. About 7:30, okay?
Okay. I can't force her. She looks defiant and stubborn.
I want to roll my eyes at you, she says.
Oh, Anna, bring it on. By all means, do, and you will make my day. She looks up at the fire sprinkler on the ceiling.
Well, a spanking would wake me up, I suppose, she says, as if she's weighing the option.
She's considering it? It doesn't work that way, Anastasia.
On the other hand, I don't want you to be all hot and bothered. The climate here is warm enough.
She gives me a saccharine smile. You are, as ever, challenging, Miss Steele. My voice is droll. Drink your tea. She sits down and takes a couple of sips. Drink up, we should go. I'm keen to get on the road. It's quite a drive.
Where are we going?
You'll see. Stop with the grinning, Gray. She pouts with frustration. Miss Steele, as ever, is curious. But all she's wearing is her camisole and jeans. She'll be cold once we're airborne. Finish your tea, I order, and leave the table. In the bedroom, I rifle through the armoire and pull out a sweatshirt. This should do. I call the valet and tell him to bring the car out front.
I'm ready, she says as I return to the main room.
You'll need this. I toss the sweatshirt to her as she gives me a bewildered look. Trust me. I plant a swift kiss on her lips. Taking her hand, I open the door to the suite and we head for the elevators. There's a hotel employee standing there. Brian, according to his name tag, also waiting for the elevator.
Good morning,
he says, giving us both a cheerful salute as the doors open. I glance at Anna and smirk as we enter. No shenanigans in elevators this morning. She hides her smile and peers at the floor, her cheeks coloring. She knows exactly what's going through my mind. Brian wishes us a good day as we exit. Outside, the valet is waiting with the Mustang. Anna arches a brow, impressed by the GT500.
Yeah, it's a fun drive, even if it's only a Mustang.
You know, sometimes it's great being me, I tease her, and with a polite bow, I open her door.
Where are we going?
You'll see. I get behind the wheel and ease the car into drive. At the stoplight, I quickly program the address of the airfield into the GPS. It directs us out of Savannah toward I-95. I switch on my iPod via the steering wheel, and the car is filled with a sublime melody.
What's this? Anna asks.
It's from La Traviata, an opera by Verdi.
La Traviata? I've heard of that. I can't think where. What does it mean?
I give her a knowing look. Well, literally, the woman led astray. It's based on Alexandre Dumas's book, La Dame aux Camélias.
Ah, I've read it.
I thought you might have.
The doomed courtesan,
she recounts, her voice tinged with melancholy.
It's a depressing story, she says.
Too depressing? We can't have that, Miss Steele, especially when I'm in such a good mood. Do you want to choose some music? This is on my iPod. I tap the navigation screen and bring up the playlist. You choose, I offer, wondering if she'll like anything I have in iTunes. She studies the list and scrolls through it, concentrating hard. She taps on a song, and Verdi's dulcet strings are replaced by a pounding beat and Britney Spears. Toxic, eh? I observe with wry humor. Is she trying to tell me something? Is she referring to me?
I don't know what you mean, she says innocently.
Does she think I should wear a warning? Miss Steele wants to play games. So be it. I turn the music down a tad. It's a little early for this remix and for the reminder.
Sir, This submissive respectfully requests Master's iPod.
I glance away from the spreadsheet I'm reading and study her as she kneels beside me, her eyes cast down. She's been exceptional this weekend. How can I refuse? Sure, Leela. Take it. I think it's in the dock.
Thank you, Master,
she says, and stands with her usual grace without looking at me. Good girl. And wearing only red high heels, she teeters over to the iPod dock and collects her reward. I didn't put that song on my iPod, I tell her breezily, and floor the gas, throwing us both into the back of our seats. But I hear Anna's small, exasperated huff above the roar of the engine. As Brittany continues at her sultry best, Anna drums her fingers on her thigh, radiating disquiet as she stares out the car window. The Mustang eats up the miles on the freeway. There's no traffic, and dawn's first light is chasing us down I-95. Anna sighs as Damien Rice begins. Put her out of her misery, Gray. And I don't know if it's my good mood, our talk last night, or the fact that I'm about to go soaring, but I want to tell her who put the song on the iPod. It was Leela.
Leela?
An ex who put the song on my iPod.
One of the 15?
She turns her full attention to me, hungry for information. Yes.
What happened to her?
We finished.
Why?
She wanted more.
And you didn't?
I glance at her and shake my head. I've never wanted more until I met you. She rewards me with her bashful smile. Yes, Anna, it's not just you who wants more.
What happened to the other 14?
She asks. You want a list? Divorced, beheaded, died? You're not Henry VIII, she scolds me. Okay. In no particular order, I've only had long-term relationships with 4 women, apart from Elena.
Elena?
Mrs. Robinson, to you. She pauses for a moment, and I know she's scrutinizing me. I keep my eyes on the road.
What happened to the 4?
She asks. So inquisitive, so eager for information, Miss Steele, I tease.
Oh, Mr. When is your period due?
Anastasia, a man needs to know these things.
Does he?
I do.
Why?
Because I don't want you to get pregnant.
Neither do I. Well, not for a few years yet, she says a little wistfully.
Of course, that would be with someone else. The thought is disquieting. She's mine.
So the other 4, what happened?
She persists. One met someone else. The other 3 wanted more. I wasn't in the market for more then.
Why did I open this can of worms? And the others?
Just didn't work out. She nods and stares out the window as Aaron Neville sings Tell It Like It Is.
Where are we headed?
She asks again. We're close now. An airfield.
We're not going back to Seattle, are we?
She sounds panicked. No, Anastasia. I chuckle at her reaction. We're going to indulge in my second favorite pastime.
Second?
Yep. I told you my favorite this morning. Her expression tells me she's completely perplexed. Indulging in you, Miss Steele. That's got to be top of my list. Any way I can get you. She looks down at her lap, her lips twitching.
Well, that's quite high up on my list of diverting kinky priorities, too, she says.
I'm pleased to hear it.
So, airfield?
I beam at her. Soaring. We're going to chase the dawn, Anastasia. I take a left into the airfield and drive up to the Brunswick Soaring Association hangar, where I stop the car. You up for this? I ask.
You're flying?
Yes. Her face glows with excitement.
Yes, please.
I love how fearless and enthusiastic she is with any new experience. Leaning over, I kiss her quickly. Another first, Miss Steele. Outside, it's cool but not cold, and the sky is lighter now, pearl and bright at the horizon. I walk around the car and open Anna's door. With her hand in mine, we make our way to the front of the hangar. Taylor is waiting there with a young bearded man in shorts and sandals.
Mr. Gray, this is your tow pilot, Mr. Mark Benson, says Taylor. I release Anna so I can shake hands with Benson, who has a wild glint in his eye.
You've got a great morning for it, Mr. Gray, Benson says. The wind is at 10 knots from the northeast, which means the convergence along the shore should keep you up for a wee while.
Benson is British, with a firm handshake.
Sounds great, I answer, and watch Anna as she shares a private joke with Taylor.
Anastasia, come.
See you later,
she says to Taylor. Ignoring her familiarity with my staff, I introduce her to Benson.
Mr. Benson, this is my girlfriend, Anastasia Steele.
Pleased to meet you,
she says, and Benson gives her a bright smile as they shake hands.
Likewise, he says, if you'd like to follow me.
Lead the way.
I take Anna's hand as we fall into step beside Benson. I have a Blahnik L-23 set up and ready. She's old school, but she handles well.
Great. I learned to fly in a Blahnik, an L-13, I tell Benson.
Can't go wrong with a Blahnik. I'm a big fan.
He gives me a thumbs up.
Though I prefer the L-23 for the aerobatics.
I nod in agreement.
You're hooked up to my Piper Pawnee, he continues. I'll take her up to 3,000 feet, then set you guys free. That should give you some flying time.
I hope so. The cloud cover looks promising.
It's a bit early in the day for much lift, but you never know. Dave, my mate, will spot the wing. He's in the Jakes.
Okay. I think Jakes means restroom.
You've been flying long?
Since my days in the RAF, but I've been flying these tail draggers for 5 years now. We're on CTAF 122.3, so you know.
Got it.
The L-23 looks to be in fine shape, and I make a note of her FAA registration. November. Papa, 3, Alpha.
First, we need to strap on your parachute.
Benson reaches into the cockpit and pulls out a parachute for Anna.
I'll do that, I offer, taking the bundle from Benson before he has a chance to put it or his hands on Anna.
I'll fetch some ballast,
Benson says with a cheery smile, and he heads toward the plane.
You like strapping me into things, Anna says with a raised brow.
Miss Steele, you have no idea. Here, step into the straps.
I hold open the leg fastenings for her. Leaning over, she puts her hand on my shoulder. I stiffen instinctively, expecting the darkness to wake and choke me, but it doesn't. It's weird. I don't know how I'm going to react where her touch is concerned. She lets go once the loops are around her thighs, and I hoist the shoulder straps up over her arms and fasten the parachute. Boy, she looks good in a harness. Briefly, I wonder how she'd look spread-eagled and hanging from the carabiners in the playroom, her mouth and her sex at my disposal. But alas, she's set suspension as a hard limit.
There, you'll do, I mutter, trying to banish the image from my mind.
Do you have your hair tie from yesterday?
You want me to put my hair up?
She asks.
Yes.
She does as she's told, for a change.
In you go.
I steady her with my hand, and she starts to climb into the back. No, front. The pilot sits in the back.
But you won't be able to see.
I'll see plenty. I'll see her enjoying herself, I hope. She climbs in, and I bend over into the cockpit to fasten her into her seat, locking the harness and tightening the straps.
Twice in one morning. I am a lucky man, I whisper, and kiss her.
She beams up at me, her anticipation palpable.
This won't take long, 20-30 minutes at most. Thermals aren't great this time of the morning, but it's so breathtaking up there at this hour. I hope you're not nervous.
Excited, she says, still grinning.
Good.
I stroke her cheek with my index finger, then put on my own parachute and climb into the pilot seat.
Benson comes back carrying ballast for Anna, and he checks her straps.
Yep, that's secure. First time?
He asks her.
Yes.
You'll love it.
Thanks, Mr. Benson, Anna says.
Call me Mark, he replies, fucking twinkling at her. I narrow my eyes at him. Okay, he asks me. Yep, let's go, I say, impatient to be airborne and to get him away from my girl.
Benson nods, shuts the canopy, and ambles over to the Piper. Off to the right, I notice Dave, Benson's mate, has appeared, propping up the wingtip. Quickly, I test the equipment. Pedals, I hear the rudder move behind me. Control stick, side to side. A quick glance at the wings and I can see the ailerons moving. And control stick, front to back. I hear the elevator respond. Right, we're ready. Benson climbs into the Piper and almost immediately the single propeller starts up, loud and throaty in the morning quiet. A few moments later, his plane is rolling forward, taking up the slack of the tow rope, and we're off. I balance the ailerons and the rudder as the Piper picks up speed. Then I ease back on the control stick, and we sail into the air before Benson does.
Here we go, baby,
I shout to Anna as we gain height.
Brunswick traffic, Delta Victor, heading 270.
It's Benson on the radio. I ignore him as we climb higher and higher. The L-23 handles well, and I watch Anna. Her head whips from side to side as she tries to take in the view. I wish I could see her smile. We head west, the newborn sun behind us, and I note when we cross I-95. I love the serenity up here, away from everything and everyone, just me and the glider looking for lift. And to think I've never shared this experience with anyone before. The light is beautiful, lambent, all I had hoped it would be, for Anna and for me. When I check the altimeter, we're nearing 3,000 feet and coasting at 105 knots. Benson's voice crackles over the radio, informing me that we're at 3,000 feet and we can release.
Affirmative, release,
I radio back and pull the release knob. The Piper disappears and I roll us into a slow dip, until we're heading southwest and riding the wind. Anna laughs out loud. Encouraged by her reaction, I continue to spiral, hoping we might find some convergence lift near the coastline or thermals beneath pale pink clouds. The shallow cumulus might mean lift, even this early. Suddenly filled with a heady combination of mischief and joy, I shout at Anna,
"Hold on tight!"
And I take us into a full roll. She squeals, her hands shooting up and bracing against the canopy. When I right us once more, she's laughing. It is the most gratifying response a man could want, and it makes me laugh, too.
I'm glad I didn't have breakfast,
she shouts.
Yes, in hindsight, it's good you didn't, because I'm going to do that again.
This time she holds onto the harness and stares directly down at the ground as she's suspended over it. She giggles, the noise mixing with the whistle of the wind.
Beautiful, isn't it?
I shout.
Yes.
I know we haven't got long, as there's not much lift out here, but I don't care. Anna is enjoying herself, and so am I.
See the joystick in front of you? Grab hold.
She tries to turn her head, but she's buckled in too tight.
Go on, Anastasia, grab it,
I urge her. My joystick moves in my hands, and I know she's holding hers.
Hold tight. Keep it steady. See the middle dial in front? Keep the needle dead center.
We continue to fly in a straight line, the yaw string staying perpendicular to the canopy.
Good girl.
My Anna. Never backs down from a challenge. And for some bizarre reason, I feel immensely proud of her.
I'm amazed you let me take control,
she shouts.
You'd be amazed what I'd let you do, Miss Steele. Back to me now.
In command of the joystick once more, I turn us in the direction of the airfield as we begin to lose altitude. I think I can land us there. I call over the radio to inform Benson and whoever might be listening that we're going to land, and then I execute another circle to bring us closer to the ground. Hang on, baby, this can get bumpy. I dip again and bring the L-23 into line with the runway